Tomorrow marks the 38th anniversary of WTIC. To commemorate the event, we bring you a special glimpse into the past, the times in which WTIC was born. The 20s.
Have you ever peeked around the curtains at night and peered into the sky and the stars? What you see there may not really be there. For beyond the power of science and man, there is the phenomenon of the speed of light. Traveling at speeds beyond comprehension, the light waves and radio waves, every one that ever was, are still out there, someday to be caught in a net like a fish in a stream. What if we could now, tonight, imagine that we could move beyond the stars and turn to hear those lost radio waves, the ether waves of a lost era? Harding and Teapot Dome, Silent Cal, who didn't choose to run, and Hoover, who did. With these leaders closed an era, a giddy climax, sometimes soaked in bathtub gin, sometimes breathless from flapping after women enjoying their new equal rights. Fabulous 20s, an age of fabulous heroes. Babe Ruth, Bobby Jones, Jack Dempsey. An age of fabulous villains. Capone, Dillinger. An age of fabulous faith and fabulous cynicism. It was America enjoying a grand spree before the big bust. The slogan was, "Lead us back to normalcy." But Harding did not lead. The American people moved forward, not backward, and they never arrived at normalcy. Politics offered few attractions to men of honor or ability. Men of ambition turned to private business rather than to public service. And the center of national power moved from Washington to Wall Street. With Harding's death entered Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge, a dour New Englander whose midnight swearing-in ceremonies thrills the nation. Quiet, reserved, soft-spoken Coolidge soon lets the country do as it well pleases. Joked H.L. Mencken, leading literary critic, Nero fiddled, but Coolidge only snored. Coolidge symbolizes a Puritan tradition which was collapsing all around him. The attempt to enforce national prohibition creates the bootlegger, the hijacker, the crooked official. Coolidge walls himself off from one of the most creative decades in our history. Indeed, in the history of any country. What set America of the 20s apart from all others was our capacity to produce wealth. The force that drove us throughout the decade, a determination to sell. As cowboy philosopher Will Rogers put it, one-third of America promotes, two-thirds of America provides. And it was the promoting third that gave the 20s their special character. Installment buying finances industrial boom and spreads wealth widely. Government debt declines while public borrowings from banks increase. Businessmen try to pyramid profits by borrowing 10 times as much ready cash as they actually possess in order to speculate in the stock market. Says Governor Roy Young of the Federal Reserve Board, "What I am laughing at is that I am sitting here trying to keep 120 million people from doing what they wanted to do." Some thought America still needed help. Will Rogers.
Now, folks, all I know is just what little news I read every day in the papers. Everybody's talking about what's the matter with this country, what the country needs. What this country needs worse than anything else is a place to park your car. What our big cities need is another orange. Orange I'm off Ireland for home rule from now on. I read an Irish paper the other day and it says liquor is 18 cents quart. Can you imagine a nation wanting more freedom than that?
Americans were doing exactly what they wanted to do. Writers, artists, humorists, musicians, singers, critics, everyone had a crack at bat and loved every minute of it. It was from the pages of Vanity Fair that there came a reflection of the time, from parodies of its pretensions to serious discussions of its intellectual interests. From Vanity Fair came the men and women who were making life less dull and more enchanting. Truculent phrase makers like H.L. Mencken and George Jean Nathan, prophets like D.H. Lawrence, critics like Ezra Pound, Aldous Huxley, Clive Bell, and Alexander Wolcott, novelists like Sinclair Lewis, Theodore Dreiser, Virginia Woolf, humorists and cartoonists like Robert Benchley, Donald Ogden Stewart, George Harriman. The great wrote about each other. Gertrude Stein on Picasso, Edmund Wilson on T.S. Eliot, T.S. Eliot on Joyce. Walter Lippmann explained politics, while Robert Benchley offered Einstein's theory for the lay mind in simple terms. The lively arts were more than adequately covered. E.E. Cummings wrote about the circus, burlesque, the musical review. Jim Tully interviewed Rudolph Valentino and Clara Bow. And Walter Winchell admired the girls in Broadway chorus lines. The pages reflected the overwhelming stupidity of Prohibition, the new crazes and easy cures, the crossword puzzle, the marathon dance, censorship and evangelism, mail-order colleges, and the vulgarity of American spenders. The chief objection to wealth appeared to lie in the idiocy with which it was being spent, and Americans were spending it on automobiles, clothes, cigars, bootleg liquor, and on Broadway. From Hartford's East Side, an obscure waitress named Sophie Abuza takes Broadway by storm, the first and the last of the Red Hot Mamas. Sophie Tucker.
Some of these days, you'll miss me, honey. Some of these days, you're gonna be so lonely. You'll miss my hugging. You're gonna miss my kissing. You're gonna miss me, honey, when I'm far away. That I feel so lonely. And when you leave me, you know it's gonna grieve me. Gonna miss your big fat mama, your mama, mama these days.
The lights are burning bright everywhere along the Great White Way. Everyone, it seems, was having fun. The halfway mark, 1925, scored as a real hit. E.E. Cummings wrote what would happen when Calvin Coolidge laughed. On Wall Street, Coca-Cola tobogganed in 8 minutes from 900.3 to 0.60745, wiping out at one fell swoop the solidly founded fortunes of no less than 2,202 pillars of society. America, someone wrote, now had three great A's: architecture, advertising, and athletics. A sketch by Myrtle Maplelet discussing the work of Oswald Brock, self-described as America's latest, greatest artist, offered his latest composition. 14 inches by 7 3/4 inches beaver board, painted pink, to which is appliqued three sprays of pussy willow, a razor blade, a snapshot of Gilda Gray taken in 1918, page 3 of the Congressional Record, and a teaspoonful of Worcestershire sauce. The 20s gave birth to the machine age and the awesome sight of mass production. Man could now easily bend the strongest steel to form new ideas for new adventure. His name was Charles Augustus Lindbergh. It was night. Around him were the cloud mountains, tall white giants with deep black spaces between them. It was very dark. He'd been afraid of the dark when he was a boy. Now he just wanted to sleep. If he could only lie down on the soft, fluffy quilt of a cloud and sleep. His eyes were closing. No, no, you can't sleep. Rub your eyes, shake your head. You're over the middle of an ocean. Charles Lindbergh's nonstop flight from New York to Paris gave the 20s immortality in aviation. The flight had begun at 7:52 p.m. on May 20th, 1927. The ship was a monoplane painted silver, called the Spirit of St. Louis. He had not slept the night before, yet he had to stay awake for 40 hours or more. He had to. His youth had been spent on a farm in Minnesota, where he would often lay on his back amid the soft grass and watch the white clouds drift overhead. It was a different world up there. How wonderful it would be if I could ride on the wind and be part of the sky. In Washington, he would visit the Smithsonian Institute with a mind full of questions. His mind was always on flying. The Wright brothers and the story of Kitty Hawk had sparked an endless imagination. Aviation school, engineering, barnstorming, it was fun and adventure. Daredevil Lindbergh, the flying fool. Now he was riding on the wind to capture America and the world's hearts. The River Seine, shimmering in the evening light. A tall column of lights, the Eiffel Tower, and history.
Gentlemen of the radio audience, this is Graham Mackinac speaking from the Navy Yard, Washington, D.C. Just a moment ago, the last turn of the propellers of the Memphis brought her close into the dock. Here is the dock, awaiting Lindbergh. Lindbergh is coming down the gangplank. Here's the boy. He's come forward. Unassuming, quiet, a little droop to his.
On the theory that popular songs reflect the spirit of the day, there should have been many about liquor, drinking. For national prohibition, the violation of it, composed a large part of the atmosphere of the 20s. But neither did the legal absence of liquor give rise to madrigals about sobriety, nor did the illegal presence of it inspire songs about inebriation. Instead, the old Stein songs reappeared and served posterity as a partial record of the manners of college students, their attitude toward life, and their clothes, especially their clothes, an age of unkeptness. The students chose that sort of clothes because they liked them. It was the vogue, and there was a kind of competition and uncouthness. It was just being collegiate.
He's got all the girlies chasing him.
But the music that was typically the 20s was jazz. Someone described jazz as brazen defiance of accepted rules, which would probably serve equally well in describing the spirit of the generation. They called it erratic syncopation. Eccentricity deliberately planned. Rapid, feverish, excited, and exciting. Said George Gershwin, music should be a product of the time in which it was produced. The old masters reflected in their music the spirit of their age. Isn't it up to us to do the same? Jazz, said Paul Whiteman, is the folk music of the machine age. The decade was so cordial to change, it seemed to prefer strangers to old friends. Many innovations rushed to take advantage of the period's zest for the new. One of the new was developed by a young man born in Vermont, reared in Maine, and educated at Yale. Hubert Prior Valley, or Rudy for short, gave the 20s a new novelty called crooning.
My time is your time. Your time is my time. We can be simple nice and simplify. We're harmonizing one step and two steps. Old step and new step. There's no time like our time and no one like you.
Someone described it as the sounds like those a mother makes to a very young child. The radio microphone and the ether waves seemed to transmute sounds of mother love into sounds having seductive appeal and some sort of magic. Hardly an innovation, and not much more than a mannerism, is the boop-boop-a-doop singing of a cute, pert little vaudeville performer named Helen Kane. These irrelevant and meaningless syllables, such as boop-boop-a-doop here and there in her songs, bring her fame and are described as syllisyllabic singing. Some of her satirically solicitous ditties are called Button Up Your Overcoat, Thank Your Father, and I Want to Be Loved by You.
I want to be by you, just you, and nobody else but you. I wanna be loved by you. But up, beat up, beat up, beat up, boop, boop, ba doo.
Another of the 20s' new public endearments are a kind of gargoyle on the cathedral of American music, Negro in origin, called the blues.
I feel like walking on into that deep blue sea. I feel like walking on into that deep blue sea. Only one I love always dogging me.
A blue, though the word was never used in the singular, was originally a lament rhythmically wailed by a Negro who felt badly. He had the blues, so he chanted a blue. Originally, the laments were spontaneous, a gloomy emotion put into moaning rhythmic words with a facility and musical expression that is native to the Negro.
You can dog me round, mistreat me all you please. Yeah, dog me round, mistreat me all you please. Someday you will need me. You give your heart to me.
The Negro's influence also made an appearance at the dance hall. Now it was a violently acrobatic frenzy of the Negro jazz band, an innovation called the Charleston. nice people did it only as an occasional stunt. They were means by which the younger set at the country club would shock the chaperones. Trouble was that by the mid-20s, there were no chaperones.
Crazy word, crazy tune, he'll be crazy, crazy soon. Ball, down, 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 down.
Just as the stage arts progressed to new heights of popularity, so do the movies on the silent screen. Valentino, Clara Bow, Charles Chaplin. In 1928, the movies finally get their voice, and movie audiences are catapulted into a new fairyland within a fabulous age. From France, an obscure singer emerges to capture the hearts of America. This was Maurice Chevalier in Paramount's Love Me Tonight.
Oh, me, 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 me. You funny little good for nothing. Me, me, I'm a good guy. Me, me. You sunny little honey over. Me, me, I'm a me high. Me, me. You've got me sad and dreamy. You could free me if you'd see me. You know I'd like to have a little son of a baby.
Now that the movies could talk and sing, the lights and stars of Broadway were being shown on screens in every city and town. And from Hollywood came one of the first colossal spectaculars, MGM's Broadway Melody, starring Charles King.
Don't bring a frown to old Broadway. You've got a clown on Broadway. Your troubles there are out of style, but Broadway always wears a smile. A million lights, they flicker there. A million hearts beat quicker there. No skies are gray on the grapevine way. That's the Broadway melody.
Everything was changing. People were staying away from home, going out on the town, until radio began to bring them back. Remember Wendell Hall, the red-headed music maker?
Wow, 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 wow.
Wow, 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 wow,
Timmy had a nickel and didn't have it long. Didn't have it long, cause the kids found out that Jimmy had a nickel, Jimmy had a nickel.
Then there was Jones and Hare, the Happiness Boys.
We two boys without a care entertain you folks out there. That's our happiness.
1924, the Lucky Strike Dance Orchestra on the air. ...1926. Remember the Ipana Troubadours? They called her the original radio girl, Vaughn DeLeith.
When you were a little shaver and went a-tumbling down, who kissed the spot to make it well? Your mother, I'll be bound. And when the sandman wouldn't sprinkle sand upon your eyes, it was your mother soothed you with her tender lullaby.
The Hula Hula arrived with the South Sea Islanders and Song of Hawaii.
Bringing me back, well, there's someone singing me my song.
Meanwhile, Frank Crummett offered the three A's, Abdul Abulbul Amir.
Sons of the Prophet were brave men and bold, and quite unaccustomed to fear. but the bravest by far in the ranks of the Shah was Abdul-Abul-Bul-Amir.
Then there was Coon Sanders' original Nighthawk Orchestra, and everything was hotsy-totsy, and how.
Hey, hey, and how.
If the 20s were to be thought of only in terms of its wild, seemingly uncontrolled gaiety, its widespread spending, and its foolhardy anti-everything convictions, then perhaps the 20s deserve retribution. The just climacteric of 1929 may have been in payment for all that occurred in those 9 years. But the 20s will always live in the hearts of musicians and composers who thought of it as the golden age of self-expression. They still recall the words of George Gershwin, "My people are American. My time is today." No American composer before him, and none since, has reflected or interpreted his times with such honesty, brilliance, and originality. Music, he said, must repeat the thought and aspirations of the times. And his did. From the staid confines of New York's Aeolian Hall on February 12, 1924, his judgment proved to the world that a new expression of freedom was coming to birth. The 20s were a sort of fantasy. Imagine that all the radio waves which were carrying tunes and melodies up and down America went on and on and up through the ether, through the stratosphere and past the stars to come together in some Valhalla of tune. Upon the listening gods, the resulting jumble might make one impression or another, depending upon the gods' standards of taste about music. But to Americans who lived through the 20s, especially the young who were in love once or more often, to these, the medley would be like the mingled scents of lavender, rosemary, and forget-me-not.
The 20s was written and produced by Paul John Friedel. Program engineer was Bill Long. The 20s was narrated by Dick Bertel. We wish to thank Brian Hartnett for permission to use selections from his own library of music from the 20s. This is Ed Anderson speaking. Good evening.